The goal of today is showing you examples, applications of least square problems, both linear and nonlinear. Okay? Actually, we are in the very first lecture, we showed you some examples already. The application I'm going to show falls within the name data or curve fitting. Okay? Imagine this kind of situation. Somehow you have some, let's say, experimental observations. Okay? And let's say these data are in this way, a vector tj, yj, where tj, let's say, is a vector, and yj is a number. Think, for instance, as tj is as the values of some quantities that measure the state of a system, okay? Physical system, computer system, and so on. And yj is a quantity you measure, okay? If the system is in this state, this other quantity takes this value, okay? For instance, it could be the positions of atoms and potential energy, or quantities related to motion, and this could be temperature. Okay, I mean, speaking about physical systems, but you could also think about computer system, but in general, as a computer science, you can see this as the TJ's input data, which goes into a black box, and you get YJ as an output. But you have no idea what happens here. Okay. Or maybe you have some guess of what happens there, but you have no explicit knowledge. Okay. In statistics, these are called regressors. Regressors. Okay. So, but what we would like to understand is what happens here. So, which relation falls between the input data and the output data? Okay. Question could be, is there a function from RS to R such that, let's say, if I compute the function in TJ, I get, or I almost get, YJ? Nubia. Well, actually, if I ask you the question in this way, there is a trivial answer. The answer is surely there is a function which here you have equal. Okay? You define f to be this quantity exactly for all your set of input data. Here you have a number of data. Okay. And whatever elsewhere. So a function exists, you define it. Okay. But clearly you just don't want any
function. You would like some particular kind of function.
Okay.
You have, in any way, you cannot guess what's here if you don't have absolutely no knowledge about the system. I would like to find a function in a particular family of functions.
Okay.
So, I would like to find an f, let's say, in a particular set of functions. Okay. For instance, I have some guess on how the system works, and let me think about the example I gave you in the very first lecture. This is a phenomenon of exponential decay. Okay? Radioactivity or some other chemical system, you could say, oh, it should be that way. Okay? So, here I would create a set of functions of a particular set of exponential functions. I will not take linear or other type of functions. So one way to try to answer this question is least squares. You compute the difference between, let's say, your input data transformed by f and your output data. You take the square, and you wish to minimize it. Minimize it all over the functions which belong to your specific space of functions, your specific set of functions. Here, of course, not just one data, you sum all over the data you have. What's the trouble? The trouble is that this is a space of function.
Okay.
Generally, space of functions or set of functions are infinite dimensional. Okay. So we don't have the tools to study this problem. Okay. But, for instance, if you take exponential decay, we could say that the function should have this form for some parameters x1 and x2. So the family of function is described by x1 and x2, which take values in R. Okay. So that we can imagine that our functions are somehow given through parameters, okay, described through a number of parameters, so that the function is actually a function which depends on a number of parameters, x1, x2, xn, okay? And let's say that xi are real numbers with no constraint. So this function is a function which depends not only on the tj, but also on a set of parameters. Okay? Here you have an example with two parameters. Okay? The function is a function of lambda, or we could say t, just to be consistent with our notation. And when you change x1 and x2, you change the function. So, in this setting, what you are changing are the parameters of the function. x1 xn in Rn such that the function is described by these parameters.
Okay.
Now, this becomes our variable.
Okay?
As x1, x2, xn change, we change the function.
Okay?
We describe the function with this parameter. So, I would like to minimize this quantity over the set of all parameters. There are some details to take care of in... I'm calling these parameters, but in our problem, these are our variables. The parameters which describe the function are our variables. Okay? Another example, for instance, if E is in Rf, are linear functions. The function depends on some parameters, let's say it's linear, so x1, t1 plus x, f, yes, okay. This, as x1, x2, xf changes in R, describe all linear functions, okay. So, if we have a set of parameters, unknown parameters, to describe our functional space, then this becomes a least square problem.
Okay?
You see, you remember last time we had our objective function, well, we had 1/2, okay? And then it was the sum of some functions, which are these, of which you take the square. And here, these are what we call the functions, the residual functions, day in Tuesday notation. I think that example explains this much better than words. So, I try to...
get back to my... to the computer. Now it's nice because it is not working anymore. Okay, now it looks like it works. We have this square extended. No, fine. Okay. I made this example in the very first lecture. These are the slides we had at that time. We would like to know if two quality indices for scientific journals are somehow related, okay? So, our data here are, for each journal, the values, okay, of the two indices. We can take one as an input and the other as an output, okay? We would like to know if one is known, if we can get the value of the other, okay? So these were my data, okay? Each point is a journal, here you have the value of one index, and here you have the value of the other index. I made an assumption that the relation between the two indexes is linear, okay? So that this index is p times the other index plus q, okay? So here, this is a
our function is p of the first index plus q. This is our f, and I use p and q, so the two parameters are p and q. Okay. To each p and q, we have a function that to each value of this index associates this quantity. Okay. So these are where my variables. I run least squares. This is a case of linear least square, and I got this result. Okay. Then I decided that, well, if one index is zero, so the value of the journal is pure junk, also the other should be zero, so I take q equals zero. Okay. And I got this other result. Okay. The question is this a good approximation of the relationship between the two quantities, the two indexes, between this and this? Well, I hope you can give you the answer by yourself. It looks like not. The data in the plane are a sort of cloud, distributed cloud, and no line approximated very in a good way. Okay. Later, another example, I show you the way to compute if the best least square approximation is actually good or not. And then I also showed you another example about exponential decay. Yeah, the functions are described by two parameters. Many fields in which you can find this type of situations or phenomena which should follow an exponential decay. This is the function for some values, and let's say these are experimental observations for values of t. I get the quantity I have. T in this case is time, so as time goes by, the quantity goes fastly to zero, and this was the best least square approximation. In this case, the least squares are nonlinear because our function of the two parameters, variable x1 and x2, which they are called theta and lambda, are nonlinear. Okay. The example with journals was with true data. This example is with fake data. So I don't have the data of any phenomenon that kind. I just took an exponential and made some added some noise, random errors. Okay. This is what we showed you in the first lecture in September. I want to show you with much more details another kind of application with true data. These are the data of the users of a web service which was introduced in January 2004. Okay. And here you have the data, the number of users which registered for the service each month for 3 years. Okay? That was a free service. You to register, it was not considered the possibility to cancel. So once you are registered, you are registered. You can use the system or not. It doesn't mind. I would like to understand how the number of users grows through time. Okay? So, users just get in, they don't get out. So, to estimate this, you simply add, in the first month, I have this number of users. After 2 months, I have this number plus this number. Okay? In March, I will have this plus this plus this. So I summed up, I summed the quantities, and I went the wrong way. And I get this type of behaviors. Okay? The number of total users. I would like to know if this growth follows some model, some pattern, okay? For instance, these are the data for 3 years, okay? How does the number of users grow in the next year, okay? Can I predict somehow, okay, the future? If I have an idea of what all of this growth, maybe I can get an idiotic prediction of what is going to happen next year. Okay? Okay, here I turn the Instagrams into a piecewise linear function. These are my data. This is a number, the month, first month, second month, and so on, up to 36. Okay, and I joined the points with lines. Okay, so this is how it behaves, how it behaved for 3 years. Well, so I went to look for some growth models in literature. I got to I got to read a book where different growth models were described. And they were functions of time, okay? And I find out somehow 4 interesting classes, okay? First class is exponential growth, okay? Which is described by 2 parameters, okay? In time, it gets the number, the system grows with that slope, okay? Which is determined by the 2 parameters. It's an exponential growth, and I'm showing you, I will show you a picture for some values of x1 and x2. If this curve starts slowly and then blows up very fast. Okay? Clearly, how much slow it starts and how fast the exponential growth is depends on the value I gave to x1 and x2. Then I consider, I find out another class of functions which is often used and are called time power models. The function, the system grows with this law, which is p to some power, which is a parameter, multiplied by some term. So the behavior of this, once again, depends, no, that way, depends on the 2 parameters, in particular the exponent, okay? And here I put 1/2, which is the square root, and it grows this way, okay? It starts fast and then gets down. If you take for x2 equal, for x2 you take 2, this is growing as a parabola. Okay? Third model, type of model, are the so-called limited growth models. Here the function depends on 3 parameters. There's a value, and then you subtract negative exponential, okay? Like the exponential decay situation. So, if you take x2 to be positive, as t goes to plus infinity, this quantity goes to 0, and so in the limit, okay, as time goes to infinity, this quantity goes to x3, okay? How fast you go to x3, it depends on this x2 and also on this scaling parameter x1. And here I gave you an example with some values. It is this way. Okay. It is this way.
It's like the exponential decay, a reverse top down. Okay.
In the exponential decay, you had
here you had the zero, and here you had the plus. Okay. Somehow it is also a particular case here. Last case is the so-called logistic growth model, whose behavior is not this different. Here you have a denominator with the exponential, with the negative exponential, correct, to positive. As t goes to plus infinity, this goes to zero, and so the denominator goes to one. So for t that goes to infinity, this goes once again to x3. The difference with the limited growth is that it goes to that value x3 in a different way. So here I made this choice of parameters. In the beginning you have a slow start, then it goes up fast, and then starts to, let's say, arrive to the limit, approach the limit value x3. Okay? So this, for you can imagine this in a system where, for instance, getting to our example, the service has not been not promoted. Okay? A lot before introducing it, so the start is low. Then you start making commercials, people get in, and you have a rapid growth, and then people get less interested, and so you have this part that goes to a limit value. So, I would like to see what I can get through least squares using these models. Okay. First remark: I did not consider exponential growth. Okay. Exponential growth is done this way. No matter how you choose the parameters, it's done that way. And I'm going the wrong, always in the wrong direction. Our system started this way. Okay. It does not have a behavior like this. So I said, okay, I can get the best approximation, but it won't be interesting. Okay? So it looks like, from a priori knowledge of my data, that this is not an exponential growth. Okay? So I canceled. And I did not consider. I did run a least squares algorithm, okay, on the other three models. So for time power, for limited and logistic growth. Okay, when you get to software package who have optimization tools, generally you find a tool for least squares. Okay, so for instance, in MATLAB there's a predefined function to do this. I did not have to code the Gauss algorithm by myself. Okay, so and the result was this. Okay, so in black you have the best approximation you get through a time power model. In blue you have the best approximation with a limited growth, and in green the logistic growth, the best for the logistic growth. Here I provided you the optimal value of this growth. Okay, the optimal value is the sum of all of the square of all these differences. Okay,
With this tool, it looks like this is the time power provides the best approximation. Okay.
And a bit better than limited growth, and logistics is even a bit worse.
Let me go to another window. If you have any curiosity, please stop me anytime. We are just I just run some I'm sorry, I have to remember. What I did. Okay, for instance, if you want to have, let's put it here. So now running the file, I got the definition of all the functions and so on. Okay, that's good. For instance, for the time power, in MATLAB there's, let's see, let me see if I got it right, okay. There's this built-in function which solves non-linear least square problems, okay? The thing is that these algorithms require that you provide an initial solution. Okay. So here I provided one that was saying that I expected these parameters to be one and one. Okay. So I was expecting the function to be t. Okay, the diagonal of the orbit. It grows like T. Was not surely a good idea. I mean, we know that it is doing this way, so it's like that the exponent is less than one. Okay, otherwise it would be it would be convex. Okay, it would be more like a parabola. Okay, but I got the solution. Let me see, and I can also ask and this is the residual, the optimal value of the function. So it's the sum of the squares of all these differences. Okay. And then I can do the same for how did I call it limited growth. I can do the same for the limited growth model. I have to provide an initial solution. Let's check it. What we can so. This is a limited thing that could be reasonable in the end. And this is how it goes. So let me see. We are going around 3,000 and 15,500. So I could set 4,000. Okay. Then what about x1, well, just take 1. And for as x, as no, sorry. Okay, as no, 1 is not a good idea. I take 4,000, that's the limit. Then for t equals 0, here you get 1, so the initial value is x3 minus x1. Okay? In the beginning we had 100 users, so if this is for 4,000, this would be 3,900, or let's say I take 4,000 all the same, okay? Like in the beginning I have 0. So here I can put 4,000, yes. I get my solution. Okay, you see, this is the optimal value, which I've been lucky, it's exactly like this one. Okay, so these are the values of the parameters. Okay, notice this is multiplied by 1,000, so this is 4,000, a bit more than 4,000, this is 0,1, and this is a bit more than 4,000 as well. And then I can do the same also for the logistic curve. And once again I get this is the value, which luckily gets here. It's exactly like this. And these are the free values. Okay? Which is the best approximation? It looks like then the logistic is not is the worst, because it starts slowly while our model starts fast. Okay, so to have a good approximation, we must start from here, and here the approximation is bad. Okay. Then in the end, it looks like that the best parameters for the limited and logistic growth to follow well the path here, then must go to a limit which is below what we are actually getting. And it looks like that the power time goes a bit better. My second. Okay, so I could use these values, AAA, okay, to predict the future. Okay, for instance, with the time power. Okay. I compute the function of time power with those parameters after another month, the first month of the fourth year, so it's month number 37, 38, and so on. Okay. And since these data are actually now old, okay, the future has already passed, and I add the data for the next 3 years, 2007, 2008, and 2009. Okay, as you can see, the data start decreasing, getting the number of new users starts to get slower and slower. It looks like the service got old. Okay, it was no more. Maybe in the beginning it was ahead of time, and then it becomes a bit obsolete. But since I'm just summing users, here it was what we had up to now, then adding the new user, the total number grows this way. Okay? And these are the three models I used to make my prediction. In black you have the time power, in blue the limited, and in green the logistic growth. What you can see? Well,
limited and logistic behave poorly. Don't do a good prediction in the future. Well, also, time power doesn't make a great prediction, but in a different way. They underestimate the number of users and the time power overestimate. Why? They were all made to fit in the first 36 months. Okay? So the best fitting for limited and logistics, since they for x that goes to plus infinity, they go to value x3. This is limited by the value x3 we had, and to have a good approximation here, okay, the value can't be much bigger. Okay? And the same. The same also for power time. Power time goes to plus infinity as t goes to infinity. So here you have a good approximation. Then it goes on with, let's say, with the same rate. Okay? It goes on as nothing happened. Okay? While, let's say, the service became a bit obsolete. Okay? So less and less people were interested, okay, and the time power was not able to predict this change. Okay, so one information is when you make predictions through data and poor fitting models, keep updating them. Okay, in the sense when you get new data, put them in the model and update the parameters. Okay, you cannot make a plan on long term with the best fit for the data you have only. Okay. There's another thing I want to show you, and then I'll show you another example. I introduced you the Gauss-Newton method on Tuesday. Okay. And if you remember well, the lecture, we had this choice. Plus this second order terms. And the idea of Gauss-Newton method was to erase the second order term and imagine this is a good approximation. Okay? Well, let's see if in this example this is true. Okay?
So, for instance, let me take let me take the solution we got for the time power. Okay, let's compute this term, and afterward this term. I wrote the code to compute these matrices, and so let me see what was going on. Okay, I forgot. So this is the transpose of the Jacobian in the current point, and this is the Jacobian in the current point. Remember this? Okay. This is a 2x2 matrices, because we have two parameters. Okay, our variables are two.
And this matrix is n times n.
Let's see what happens to the second order terms. I think I call them this way.
Okay, they are the same order of magnitude.
No, sorry, I'm not doing... Oh, AA was, sorry, the limited growth. Okay, so... I'm not sure it was...
The algorithm converts all the same, okay? It doesn't depend on the fact that it works even if the approximation is bad. It's slower.
Okay. So, this doesn't sound a good case. Let me see time power. Oh, sorry, I made a huge mistake. I applied to the wrong solution. Okay, erase everything. Okay, I was doing the function for time power applied to the solution of the other problem. So this is wrong. This was wrong. So the now it looks like it should have been. Yeah.
Okay. So now we did the first order terms and the second order terms. There are two order of magnitude. This is 10 to the 12 and this is 10 to the 10. Okay? So, this is two order of magnitude smaller than this. So, it looks like that the Gauss-Newton method can work well.
Okay? Let's check on the limited growth. And let's hope I take the right solution. Okay, the name is not that. Okay, there's final G. Okay, so in this case we have three parameters in the functions.
So we have three variables and the Hessian matrix is 3 times 3.
Let's try also the second order terms. And the second order terms...
are bigger. Three order magnitude. So, in this case, the approximation is very bad. Okay? It's really very bad. So, the algorithm would take a lot more iterations to get to the solution. It works, but it works much poorly. Okay? So now I aim to change the example and go to a complete different kind of example. Okay? And somehow, if you want to give a title, could be about economic indicators. Okay? And then show you some my source of inspiration, if I have it. Yeah. Few years ago, reading Scientific American, actually reading Le Scienze. I came across this article. Where is it? Here it is. Bigger cities do more with less. Okay. And the subtitle was New Science Reveals Why Cities Become More Productive and Efficient as They Grow. Okay. The bigger the city is, the more efficient it is. This is the message here. I had the journal in the magazine in my hands and I had a look at this picture, much larger than here, and it was looking like a linear regression. Okay, you have data in a three-dimensional space and then a line. Okay, so I asked, so
What is this new science they are developing? Okay. So I tried to give a look around. This is the introduction of the article, and it is saying. The same method somehow. Okay. Scientific American, scientific magazines, I mean, they aim to divulgate science, but I find out that this type of result had also a much more popular, got attention for much more popular magazines. They got attention from the New York Times, which is not which is definitely one of the most important journals on earth. I found out that the magazine of the New York Times got this article just a bit before the number of Scientific American with this title, "A Physicist Solves the City." It's a long article. I read it, and somewhere, I hope it is already, yeah, it is. It explained what these scientists were doing, taking a lot of data about a lot of cities and trying to correlate quantities, and I was attracted by these sentences. The two scientists discovered that urban variables could be described by simple equations. And, for example, if they know the population of a metropolitan area in a given country, they can estimate with roughly 85% accuracy its average income. Okay? Sapete cos'è income? Income è il salario. Okay? Income is the salary, how you get for your, how much you get for your work. Okay. And I got interested. I said, let me see if I can do something similar. Okay. I did not find their data. They had also article in scientific journals, but there were the results, but not the complete set of data. So I had to do it by myself, and so I tried to look for information on our country, okay? But it looks like it's much easier to get information and data from the US than from Eastern. Okay? And indeed, without asking anyone, just going on the website of the Bureau of Economic Analysis, the U.S. Bureau of Economic Analysis, I find out data on the gross domestic product, GPD, PIL. Okay, and I also find out some articles wrote by staff of the Bureau, which made models to compute the GPD of areas. Okay. Generally, when you speak of GDP, you speak of the GDP of the whole country, not the GDP of a city. We don't have information on the GDP in Pisa or in Lucca or in Livorno. Okay. Roughly, you could get it for Tuscany, but more generally, it's given for the whole country. I find out a paper by their staff people and. Least square. Okay, this was the article, and they gave that they explained how they tried to measure the GPD of an area. I did not dig the details. Okay, I'm confident they are an economic analyst, so I got their data. But in the paper, I think that in the end of the paper, yeah,
there were data,
and I put them in a spreadsheet a minuscule, tiny, let me see. No. Cancel. So I got their data. And I got metropolitan areas of the United States. Here I have a number of, let's say, metropolitan areas with less than 500,000 people. Okay, they are around 260. And the data I was able to collect is the population and the estimate of the pro capita GDP. Okay, and I also had I will not go enlarge it, but here you have the large cities, the areas of the United States with more than 500,000 inhabitants. These are around 90. So this is the population and this is the GDP. So my idea was, is there any relationship between the population and the GDP? If I know the population, can I give you an estimate of the GDP in that area? And so now I need I have my material. I have a few files here. Okay. So I can run it. Okay, each point is a city, and you have two data. Number of inhabitants, okay, GDP. Okay, here I took the data for the 96 areas with more than 500,000 people. Okay, as you can see, this is 10 to the 7, this is 2 million, okay? Here you have, we start here from at least 500,000, and then you grow. This one, which is between 18 and 20 million, up there should be Los Angeles. Okay? And first thing, I run linear least squares. Okay, I imagine that the GDP, is a linear function of the population. Okay, I look for some alpha such that if I multiply the population by alpha, I get the GDP. Okay, my model was linear, so here my function
my function was this one.
Okay?
With a unique parameter.
And the best result you get is this one. Okay? Well,
but if you make a linear,
if you make a linear model, you are saying that if the, let's say, if the size doubles, okay, the GPD doubles. Okay? Why, in that article, those American scientists were saying that bigger cities were doing better. So, if the size doubles, the result should be more than the double. Okay?
And so,
I also tried, so this should be roughly this one. I also tried a nonlinear model done this way. Not alpha times the population, but alpha times the population to the beta power. Okay? Somehow this is a time growth model, okay? Like in the previous example, except for the fact that now the t in that function, the t here now is no longer really time, it's population, okay? So I could say a population power. Okay, and I also run, so
I run no linear least square for this case,
and what I got was this, a bit different, okay, starts below and then goes up, I think to catch up with Los Angeles up there.
Then I also run it for, in red I added all the small areas, okay? And I did once again the linear least square and the non-linear least square for these two models. Is the result different? Sure, it is different because I have more data, okay?
So, here in the LGD function, I sum up more quantities. Okay? For the case with the large metropolitan areas, they were roughly 100, and then now I'm adding another 200 or almost 200 and a half more terms here, okay? So, the variables keep being the same, but the function is different because you are writing many more terms.
I ran linear and non-linear least squares. The best approximation are given by the dotted lines, okay?
They are not meaningfully different from the previous one. Okay.
Let me see. Okay.
This value is the best alpha here.
Let me check. Sorry, I don't remember. I don't remember them by heart.
This is for the
when you just consider the larger areas, and this is when you also consider the smaller ones. Okay? You see, the difference is here on the third decimal digit. You go from 469 to 471 to 469. Okay? Not a big difference. And then I also did the same thing for the non-linear model. Okay. So this is alpha and this is beta, the best one for bigger areas, and this if you also consider, if you also add the smaller areas. And these are the residuals. Okay? They are all big because the quantities are big and many. Notice here, in the nonlinear cases, the exponent here is not 1, is bigger than 1. Okay? Not so much bigger than 1, but a bit bigger than 1. It means that if you double the population, you get a bit more than the double. Okay? You get the double if here you have 1. If here you have 1.08, you get 2 to that power. Okay? That is a bit more than 2. Let's see, 2 to the 1.8 power. It's 2.11. Okay? If you double, you don't get the double, but you get the double 0.11. I'm going back to what I read on that article, and they said, well, they could give the result with 85% accuracy. Okay? What does this mean? Okay. What they used up to now to evaluate the quality of these approximations here was the value of the objective function. Okay? Which in the linear case, here it is a bit bigger than in the nonlinear case. But, I mean, how do I get accuracy? Well, let me just zoom a little bit, for instance, in this area, which is probably a bit more interesting. Well, it's the same. It's similar, but not the same as the objective function. The objective function takes all these differences, takes the square, and sum them. Okay? That's the way you get the objective function, and you get the best fit. Okay? For each CD, you get the real data, and you get the estimated data. Okay? So I can make a vector with all these differences. Okay? For instance, I could take the largest of them, or the minimum of them, or more reasonably, the average dimension. Okay? The largest, I mean, why don't I take the minimum? Well, I don't take the minimum because it's likely that I will get a very good one. So here is almost zero. Why don't I take the maximum? Because there will be some data which do not fit into the model at all. Okay? So often called outliers. So it would be large. Okay, so the minimum would be very too small. The maximum would be probably too large. So it's good to take the average. And this is what I did here. Here, these, where are they? These lines of code here says that I took the mean of these differences. Here and here. And these are the values I got, okay? This is the mean differences between what I predicted with the model and the actual truth. Linear and nonlinear case, a bit less in the nonlinear case. Clearly, this should not be surprising you. Why is necessarily the nonlinear case better than the linear case? Look at the two formulas here. Okay? Beta equal, this one is a particular case in which you fix beta to be 1. Okay? So the linear case is contained here. Okay? So if the best fit is given by a linear function, you surely get it also here. Okay? Because beta equal 1 is a feasible choice. If this is a good measure, I took the mean of those differences, okay? Well, but the mean of those differences is 15,000, okay? Million dollars. If data are very small, actually, a small difference may be more meaningful than a larger difference. That a larger difference if the values are bigger. Okay, I mean you should know this. While I'm taking this difference, I'm considering the absolute error. Okay, while probably it's better to consider the relative error. Okay. So, the difference between what I predicted, and the actual value, divided by the actual value, okay? Since I have all this data, I can compute also the relative error, and I can take the minimum, the maximum, and the mean. Same thing as before. The best thing is to take the mean, so I have an idea. Let me see how I call them. Here are the simple formulas I used to make them. So this is the linear case. And this is the nonlinear case. This gives a better idea. In the linear case, my average error is 1/3. Okay? 33%. In the nonlinear case, my average relative error is 19%. So, I could say that I can compute the GPD of an area from each population with 81% accuracy. Okay. I'm going back to the New York Times, and they were saying approximately 85%. Okay. I mean, their data are different from mine. So, but what they did is exactly this sort of thing. So, this new science is nothing else than taking a huge number of data and make this type of analysis. Okay? Data fitting, curve fitting, computation of errors.
I'm not saying that these things are not interesting at all.
They are. And indeed, not only Scientific America, not only the New York Times, but also the English magazine The Economist, and a year and a half later, wrote an article on exactly the same research by the same researcher, and called it The Laws of the City. Okay? They have a lot of data, not only on Instagram, also on pipes, and but actually, what my goal was to show you that the mathematics behind this sort of analysis is the one we did in this lecture with Professor Bevilacqua and me. Okay? And that's it. You have to collect data, you have to be careful in collecting data, you have to have an idea of which type of model you want to build. Okay? Because for instance, if in my mind I had the idea that the growth model for total users of that web system has to be exponential, okay, which was a plain wrong guess, I could make the best fit in that way, okay, but it wouldn't be much easier. So I have to have a clear idea of which type of functions and parameters I can work with. Okay? Economists do a lot of work on with least squares, and generally with linear least squares. So you can say that actually those physicists were telling is, please, don't stick just to linear models, okay? You can consider a bit more general models and you get some better idea. But I want to show that what we are doing here is not necessarily good. I mean, are we sure that population is actually related to GDP or not? It is a good starting idea or not? I don't have the answer to the question of the example. I think that it is reasonable. Okay? I mean, if it is just the 10 of us, we will produce a certain amount of GDP. Okay? If we are the double, it is reasonable that we will produce more. Okay? The first guess is we are double, we produce the double. Okay? What they are saying is, you produce a bit more than the double. But this is somehow a sort of a hypothetic correlation. Okay? So I want to end this lecture showing you some, I hope, funny examples. It just will take 5 minutes, no more. Okay. I collected some data, once again from the US. Okay. This is a set of 11 years, from 1999 to 2009. And here you have how much the U.S. government spends on science, space, NSA, and NASA, and technology, okay, in million dollars, okay. They started with, this is 18,000 millions, and the expenditure evolved this way, okay. Now I provide you different data in the same a different kind of data for the same year. Why it is not working? Oh. Okay. Sorry, it crashed. So
let me start it once again.
So I gave you this data.
Now
I'm going to give you a different set of data for the very same years. Which data I'm going to give you?
Remember this type of behavior. Okay?
The data I gave you is the number of suicides by hanging, okay? Or strangulation, suffocation. I suicidi per impiccagione, strozzamento e soffocamento, in the US, in the same years. Okay?
Look at the behavior.
Values are completely different. Okay. Then I can put together, each year represent, I can make the plane where on one axis you have the expenditure and on the other axis you have suicides. Okay. And each point represents one of our data, it represents one particular year. Here it is. Okay. In one of those years, this was the expenditure on science, and this was the number of suicides. Okay?
See? They behave this way.
I run linear least squares. I simply run linear least squares. And this is the best approximation I get. Okay, it is good or it is not good. Let's see the mean relative error, okay? Well, I made the computation and the mean relative error is less than 2%. Okay? So it should be that if there would be a correlation, it would be the more you spend on science, the more people hang, okay? Suicide by hanging. Doesn't sound reasonable. Okay, but some may say, no, it is reasonable because, anti-scientific movements, people saying the science is doing bad for us. So I give you another example of the same kind. I mean, the math is the same, and I took 10 years, and I got data on per capita, pro capite, consumption of margarine in the US, given in pounds, libre. Okay? How much pounds each American used in one given year. Okay? And this is how it works. Okay? And then I took another data for the same 10 years, from 2000 to 2009, and these are the given by divorce rate in Maine, one of the states of the U.S. Okay? The number of divorces for 1,000 people. Okay? 5, 4, and the trend is this one. Okay? Then I put the two together. Each point is like here. Here you have margarina, and here you have divorces. Okay? You run least squares, linear least squares, you get this result, you compute the error, the relative error, and you get less than 1%. Okay? So it should be that we should have Americans stop eating margarina, otherwise it affects families in Maine. Okay? I mean, this is nonsense, pure nonsense. Okay? Correlation doesn't mean that there is necessarily a cause-effect situation. Okay? How did I treat you the year? For instance, I took not a lot of data. Okay? Data years were 10 points. Okay? And then you can scale them appropriately and so on. If you want to have fun, this is not stuff I did. I took them from that website over there, tylervegan.com, where you can find other 10 funny examples like this. Okay? These were the two with the smallest relative error. Okay. So this error was something funny that you will remember to say that correlation doesn't necessarily mean that there is a mathematical correlation through least squares doesn't necessarily mean that there is a relation, particularly in the economic sector. Okay, so these are the examples I wanted to show you. The mathematics behind what I showed you is the one we discussed in this week's with you, Professor Bevilacqua, and I described. Okay? That is the mathematics. These are a couple of applications. You can think of a huge number of them. Okay, so we start here, and on Tuesday we will start again with use the standard lectures, and I will start talking to you about constraint optimization. From the beginning of the course up to now, we discussed just unconstrained optimization. Okay? So, variables were not restricted. But indeed, when you go to application, generally you have some constraints, at least some constraints. So, and this will be the topic till the end of the semester.